Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 27 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this journey to raise your productivity to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 517. Today, Gene asks,
I listen to you not as a writer myself, but as a consumer of writing. You've helped me to both clarify my previous perspectives and given me a broader perspective of the craft. As a non-com, I found most of episode 513 to be applicable to life in general. Side note, I'd love to hear an episode based on those observations, but applied to a broader perspective.
That was the episode on learning the hard way.
So, my question, in what ways does your personal philosophy converge with the craft of writing, or are they discrete? How, if at all, does an author maintain an objective distance from the voice in which they write? How does that differ between fiction and nonfiction?
Ooh, three good questions. I could have made three episodes out of this one. Damn it, must think ahead next time. First of all, welcome. I didn't realize that we had non-writers listening to this. All of you non-writers in the audience, thank you, welcome. It's great to have you. Let's see. Now to let that not influence the way I answer questions because of how much I'm lifting up the curtain here. Okay, let's see. So with regards to my personal philosophy and the craft of writing, the process of learning to write and of learning how writing works is tied deeply into my personal philosophy. There's a feedback loop between my writing process and my personal philosophy. But that has a lot to do with which aspects of craft I really take on board and which aspects are uninteresting to me and the ways in which I develop and that sort of thing. Or the ways in which I apply the techniques I've learned and the ethics I have around that. In terms of the craft of writing as a discipline, it's a little bit like asking a carpenter how his philosophy of life is impacted by the fact that he's a carpenter. There's gonna be a profound way that that's true. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. And especially for someone like me who's an autodidact, I'm a very integrative thinker, right? If something works in one area, I try to see if I can adapt that thing and apply it to another area of life, as you were doing with my episode on things I've learned the hard way. That's going on, and I'll talk about that in a second. But just like with a carpenter, the way to square up a wall or measure a cut or wield a skill saw or operate a drill press doesn't affect your personal philosophy. It's just a mechanical technique that you have to learn and that you get better at with practice. The fact that you have to learn them, that it's important to be accurate, and that you get better with practice are the principles that you can apply from carpentry to your life. But you can't solve a lot of interpersonal problems with a measuring tape and a skill saw. Or if you do solve them with a measuring tape and a skill saw, big guys with guns will eventually come to your door and demand that you knock it off. Now, for me personally, I find that I'm using the same basic tools for the structures of thought, the structure of narrative. They're the same ones that are used in storytelling, they're used in logic, they're used in argument, that are used in other kinds of thinking. You've got your abductive logic and your analogical thinking and your metaphors and all of that sort of thing. One of my big interests is epistemology, and I find that there is a lot of cross-applicability between studying the ways that humans think and learning ways to write better so that humans will enjoy the stories more. And in the process of writing, I discover things about myself. I'm thinking through things about the world that allows me to put together ideas I haven't put together before. That's really valuable to me, and that affects the way that I tell a given story, affects the way that a story unfolds, frequently in ways that I couldn't have anticipated. And that's part of the joy for me in writing, that process of discovery and synthesis. And of course, another way that my personal philosophy converges with my writing craft is that I am a very integrative thinker. I like everything to work together. And I also have a somewhat grudging appreciation for the random and pitiless elements of the universe. I don't like them very much, but I've learned to accept them, and I've learned that in accepting them, it makes life much easier to enjoy. And so that balance between chaos and order, where beauty comes from symmetry and harmony that's mixed up a little bit with some randomness and wildness, that, I think, comes through in my writing. It's certainly something that's always in the back of my head as I write. There's a particular aesthetic flavor that my subconscious seems to be searching for as I write. And that flavor is set by my personal philosophy, my understanding of how the universe works, and consequently, my criteria for what makes something believable and relatable. The next part of your question you asked, how does an author maintain an objective distance from the voice in which they write? Well, you don't. I was watching a lecture by J. Michael Straczynski recently, which, if I can find it again, I'll link to in the show notes here. Someone asked him a question like this, and he said that the more writers you know, the more you realize that the voice in which they talk is the voice with which they write. And that is frequently true. That's why not too long ago when someone asked about expanding their writerly vocabulary, I went straight to expanding your functional vocabulary, the words you use when you speak. Because whether it's words on a page or it's words out your mouth, they're both coming right through the language centers of your brain, straight out through your personality. The way that you speak is the way that you write. There's a few differences, like there's fewer ums when you write, hopefully. But the vocabulary, the concerns, the way that you spin a metaphor, those tend to be mostly the same for most writers between writing and speaking. Now, there have been a few writers that I've known who are far more loquacious in their writing than in their speaking. Writing allows them to unlock a part of their mind that they normally don't bring out at parties. And so whole different pieces of their personality and aesthetics shine through that aren't normally on display. But those few exceptions aside, mostly the voice you speak with is the voice you write with. Now, how does that differ between fiction and nonfiction? Well, it depends a lot on both the fiction and the nonfiction. So I'll talk about my own writing with fiction first. I'll use a couple of examples from other writers if I can think of them. I, for example, write, especially when I write first person, I'll write in dialect. Now, I haven't gone so far as to write, for example, in Russian dialect, like Heinlein did in Moon is a Harsh Mistress, but I've done something similar. I did write in Panglish, or in a very muted Panglish, for a third of the Resurrection Junket, or more a Panglish speaker who was trying to write in normal English and getting the kinds of things wrong that you do when you're speaking Panglish. But the linguistics in that book were so interesting that I had actually a linguistically educated friend go over it and sort of check my dialect before I released it because I was trying to do a particular thing with it. So Third of the Resurrection Junket is written in that muted journalistic version of Panglish. Suave Rob is written in Surfer, particularly Southern California Surfer. What else? I've done a few short stories here and there in different kinds of dialects. I did one in Broad Scots. I've done a couple in different accents of British English. I did one in Received Pronunciation. I did another in Lower London Cockney-ish, some stuff like that. But even across all those wide range of voices, it's still me speaking through there, and you can still hear the writerly voice going through. In my fiction, the narrator that speaks the most like I speak in everyday life is Clark Lantham. He's not the character I'm most like, but he's the one that speaks the most like I do. And the way I narrate in third person is very much like the way I speak in a sort of more formal setting. Not necessarily an academic setting, but if I had to like speak in court or whatnot. That sort of dressed up a little bit, or in a business situation, that's more how my third-person narrative voice comes through. Now, in nonfiction, in the Everyday Novelist books, in parts of Throwing Lead, and in Making Tracks, I speak in a very personable manner, as if I'm speaking directly to the reader. In a lot of the articles I've written, and sometimes when I'm working out a section, I'll revert to my native dialect, my native nonfiction dialect, which is academicese. So I actually will write very formal polysyllabic abstract language, and then sometimes have to go back and smooth it out with colloquia to make it accessible to people who didn't grow up with graduate school professors all around them, which I did. But in any case, if you picked up one of my nonfiction books and read it, and then you had coffee with me, it would be very much the same person speaking to you. And if you picked up one of my more academic books and read it, and then you went to a convention with me, or you had coffee with me and asked me about philosophy, or something a little more esoteric, you'd get my academic voice. It just pops out automatically. So that's kind of how they're related, and that sort of relation, with the minor levels of code switching and whatnot, are very like what I've observed in other writers. Another, since I invoked Straczynski, another thing he said in the same lecture was, by the way, if you don't know, J. Michael Straczynski is the guy who wrote Babylon 5. He wrote the first Thor movie. He's written a lot of film and television. He's only written the occasional book. One of his best things that I've seen was The Changeling, which was a fantastic little independent film directed by Clint Eastwood, starring Angelina Jolie, and I can't remember who the male lead was, but you talk about a creepy-ass film. Great movie. Straczynski said in this lecture that voice is the body you have, and style is the clothes that you wear. So across all of my books, these different voices I'm talking about, they're styles that I'm putting on. They're instruments that I'm picking up and playing. But the person playing the instrument, the person under the clothes, is still me. And that carries through. In the same way that my actual voice carries through, whether I'm speaking in my relatively native West Coast accent like I am now, or if I revert to the Texan accent I had when I was a little kid, or if I go to Georgia and I take an upper-class Savannah accent and regale you with tales of mint juleps and great old times out on the Confederate battlefields, or if I go to Russia and give you a good Russian accent, a good clipped Eastern European Southern Russian accent, which is one of my favorites, or if I give you a French, you know, a very nice Parisian French. All of these accents are clothes I'm putting on, but the voice is still mine. Same kind of idea. Anyway, thank you very much for the question. I think this is the first time we've ever had a civilian write in, so welcome to the fray. And hey, if you want to write your own stories and join the fight, that would be fantastic. Please feel free to send in questions again anytime. Thank you very much. And I'll see you tomorrow. The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2018 by J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2018 Artistic Whispers Productions. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.